The Psi-Psych Agatha Marie Black gave Northwind a tranquilizer, then looked at the two linguists.
Did you see it happen?
She did it herself with the knife, Daniel said.
From somewhere down the corridor, there came the sound of wild, hysterical laughter.
I dampened him,
Marie Black reported to Caroli DeBrannan later the same day.
Cyanine 4. It will blunt his receptivity for several days, and I have more of it if he needs it.
DeBrannan wore a stricken look.
We talked several times, and I could see that Tyler was becoming ever more fearful, but he could never tell me the why of it. Did you have to shut him off?
The Psi-Psych shrugged.
He was edging into the irrational. Given his level of talent, if he'd gone over the edge, he might have taken all of us with him. You should never have taken a Class 1 telepath, DeBrannan. Too unstable.
We must communicate with an alien race. I remind you that is no easy task. The Volgrin will be more alien than any sentience we have yet encountered. We needed Class 1 skills if we were to have any hope of reaching them. And they have so much to teach us, my friend.
Glib, she said. But you might have no working skills at all. Given the condition of your Class 1, half the time he's curled up into the fetal position in a sleep web, half the time he's strutting and crowing and half mad with fear. He insists we're all in real physical danger, but he doesn't know why or from what. The worst of it is that I can't tell if he's really sensing something or simply having an acute attack of paranoia. He certainly displays some classic paranoid symptoms. Among other things, he insists that he's being watched. Perhaps his condition is completely unrelated to us, the Volgrin, and his talent. I can't be sure.
What of your talent? DeBrannan said. You are an empath, are you not?
Don't tell me my job, she said sharply. I sexed with him last week. You don't get more proximity or better rapport for esping than that. Even under those conditions, I couldn't be sure of anything. His mind is a chaos, and his fear is so rank it stink up the sheets. I don't read anything from the others either, besides the ordinary tensions and frustrations. But I'm only a 3, so that doesn't mean much. My abilities are limited. You know I haven't been feeling well, DeBrannan. I can barely breathe on this ship. The air seems thick and heavy to me. My head throbs. I ought to stay in bed.
Yes, of course, DeBrannan said hastily. I did not mean to criticize. You have been doing all you can under difficult circumstances. How long will it be until Tala is with us again?
The Psi-Psych rubbed her temple wearily.
I'm recommending we keep him dampened until the mission is over, DeBrannan. I warn you, an insane or hysterical telepath is dangerous. That business with Northwind and the Knife might have been his doing, you know. He started screaming not long after, remember? Maybe he touched her for just an instant. Oh, it's a wild idea, but it's possible. The point is, we don't take chances. I have enough cyanine 4 to keep him numb and functional until we're back on Avalon.
But Royd will take us out of drive soon, and we will make contact with the Volgrin. We will need Tala, his mind, his talent. Is it vital to keep him dampened? Is there no other way?
Marie Black grimaced.
My other option was an injection of Esperon. It would have opened him up completely, increased his psionic receptivity tenfold for a few hours. Then I'd hope he could focus in on this danger he's feeling. Exercise it if it's false, deal with it if it's real. But Psi-9 4 is a lot safer. Esperon is a hell of a drug, with devastating side effects. It raises the blood pressure dramatically, sometimes brings on hyperventilation or seizures, has even been known to stop the heart. Lassimer is young enough so that I'm not worried about that, but I don't think he has the emotional stability to deal with that kind of power. The cyanine should tell us something. If his paranoia persists, I'll know it has nothing to do with his telepathy.
And if it does not persist, Caroli DeBrannan said.
Agatha Marie Black smiled wickedly at him.
If Lassimer becomes quiescent and stops babbling about danger, why, that would mean he was no longer picking up anything, wouldn't it?
and that would mean there had been something to pick up, that he'd been right all along. At dinner that night, Tyler Lassimer was quiet and distracted, eating in a rhythmic, mechanical sort of way, with a cloudy look in his blue eyes. Afterwards, he excused himself and went straight to bed, falling into exhausted slumber almost immediately. "What did you do to him?" Lommy Thorne asked Marij Black.
"I shut off that prying mind of his," she replied.
"You should have done it 2 weeks ago," Lindgren said. "Docile, he's a lot easier to take." Karoli DeBrannon hardly touched his food. False night came, and Royd's wraith materialized while Karoli DeBrannon sat brooding over his chocolate.
"Karoli," the apparition said, "would it be possible to tie in the computer your team brought on board with my shipboard system? Your Vulcan stories fascinate me, and I would like to be able to study them further at my leisure. I assume the details of your investigation are in storage."
"Certainly," DeBrannon said in an offhand, distracted manner. "A system is up now. Patching it into the Nightflyer should present no problem. I will tell Lami to attend to it tomorrow."
Silence hung in the room heavily. Karoli DeBrannon sipped at his chocolate and stared off into the darkness, almost unaware of Royd.
"You are troubled," Royd said after a time.
"Eh?"
"Oh, yes."
DeBrannon looked up. "Forgive me, my friend. I have much on my mind."
"It concerns Tala Lassimer, does it not?"
Karoli DeBrannon looked at the pale, luminescent figure across from him for a long time before he finally managed a stiff nod.
"Yes."
"Might I ask how you knew that?" "I know everything that occurs on the Nightflyer," Royd said.
"You have been watching us," DeBrannon said gravely, accusation in his tone. "Then it is so what Tala says about us being watched." "Royd, how could you? Spying is beneath you."
The ghost's transparent eyes had no life in them, did not see.
"Do not tell the others," Royd warned. "Karoli, my friend, if I may call you my friend, I have my own reasons for watching, reasons it would not profit you to know. I mean you no harm. Believe that. You have hired me to take you safely to the Vulcan and safely back, and I mean to do just that."
"You're being evasive, Royd," DeBrannon said. "Why do you spy on us? Do you watch everything? Are you a voyeur, some enemy? Is that why you do not mix with us? Is watching all you intend to do?"
"Your suspicions hurt me, Karoli."
"Your deception hurts me. Will you not answer me?"
"I have eyes and ears everywhere," Royd said. "There is no place to hide from me on the Nightflyer. Do I see everything? No, not always. I am only human, no matter what your colleagues might think. I sleep. The monitors remain on, but there is no one to observe them. I can only pay attention to one or two scenes or inputs at once. Sometimes I grow distracted, unobservant. I watch everything, Crowley, but I do not see everything."
"Why?"
DeBrannon poured himself a fresh cup of chocolate, steadying his hand with an effort.
"I do not have to answer that question. The Nightflyer is my ship."
DeBrannon sipped chocolate, blinked, nodded to himself.
"You grieve me, my friend. You give me no choice. Tala said we were being watched, and now I learn that he was right. He says also that we are in danger. Something alien, he says. You?"
The projection was still and silent. DeBrannon clucked.
"You do not answer."
"Ah, Royd, what am I to do?"
"I must believe him, then. We are in danger, perhaps from you. I must abort our mission, then. Return us to Avalon, Royd. That is my decision."
The ghost smiled wanly.
"So close, Karoli. Soon now we will be dropping out of drive."
Karoli DeBrannon made a small, sad noise deep in his throat.
"My Vulcan," he said, sighing.
so close. Ah, it pains me to desert them, but I cannot do otherwise. I cannot.
You can, said the voice of Royd Eris. Trust me, that is all I ask, Skaroli. Believe me when I tell you that I have no sinister intentions. Tala Lassima must speak of danger, but no one has been harmed so far, have they?
No, admitted Debrannon. No, unless you count Alice cutting herself this afternoon.
What?
Royd hesitated briefly.
Cutting herself? I did not see, Karoli. When did this happen?
Oh, early, just before Lassima began to scream and rant, I believe.
I see.
Roy's voice was thoughtful.
I was watching Melantha go through her exercises, he said finally, and talking to her. I did not notice. Tell me how it happened.
Debrannon told him.
Listen to me, Royd said. Trust me, Karoli, and I will give you your Vokran. Calm your people, assure them that I am no threat, and keep Lassima drugged and quiescent. Do you understand? That is very important. He is the problem.
Agatha advises much the same thing.
I know, Royd said. I agree with her. Will you do as I ask?
I do not know, Debrannon said. You make it hard for me. I do not understand what is going wrong, my friend. Will you not tell me more?
Royd Eris did not answer. His ghost waited.
Well, Debrannon said at last, you do not talk. How difficult you make it. How soon, Royd? How soon will we see my Vokran?
Quite soon, Royd replied. We will drop out of drive in approximately 70 hours.
70 hours, Debrannon said. Such a short time. Going back would gain us nothing. He moistened his lips, lifted his cup, found it empty. Go on, then. I will do as you bid. I will trust you. Keep Lassima drugged. I will not tell the others of your spying. Is that enough, then? Give me my Vokran. I have waited so long.
I know, said Royd Eris. I know.
Then the ghost was gone, and Karoli Debrannon sat alone in the darkened lounge. He tried to refill his cup, but his hand began to tremble unaccountably, and he poured the chocolate over his fingers and dropped the cup, swearing, wondering, hurting. The next day was a day of rising tensions and 100 small irritations. Lindgren and Danil had a private argument that could be overheard through half the ship. A 3-handed war game in the lounge ended in disaster when Christophorus accused Melantha Jurl of cheating. Lami Thorne complained of unusual difficulties in tying her system into the shipboard computers. Alice Northwind sat in the lounge for hours, staring at her bandaged finger with a look of sullen hatred on her face. Agatha Marige Black prowled through the corridors, complaining that the ship was too hot, that her joints throbbed, that the air was thick and full of smoke, and that the ship was too cold. Even Karoli Debrannon was despondent and on edge. Only the telepath seemed content. Shot full of cyanine-4, Tala Lassimer was often sluggish and lethargic, but at least he no longer flinched at shadows. Royd Eris made no appearance, either by voice or holographic projection. He was still absent at dinner. The academicians ate uneasily, expecting him to materialize at any moment, take his accustomed place, and join in the mealtime conversation. Their expectations were still unfulfilled when the after-dinner pots of chocolate and spiced tea and coffee were set on the table.
Our captain seems to be occupied, Melantha Jurl observed, leaning back in her chair and swirling a snifter of brandy.
We will be shifting out of drive soon, Karoli Debrannon said. Undoubtedly, there are preparations to make.
Secretly, he fretted over Roy's absence and wondered if they were being watched even now.
Rojan Christophorus cleared his throat. Since we're all here and he's not, perhaps this is a good time to discuss certain things. I'm not concerned about him missing dinner. He doesn't eat. He's a damned hologram. What does it matter? Maybe it's just as well. We need to talk about this. Coroli, a lot of us have been getting uneasy about Royd Eris. What do you know about this mystery man anyway?
No, my friend. DeBrannon refilled his cup with a thick, bittersweet chocolate and sipped at it slowly, trying to give himself a moment to think.
What is there to know?
Surely you've noticed that he never comes out to play with us, Lindgren said dryly. Before you engaged his ship, did anyone remark on this quirk of his?
I'd like to know the answer to that one, too, said Dan'l, the other linguist. A lot of traffic comes and goes through Avalon. How'd you come to choose Eris? What were you told about him?
Told about him?
Very little, I must admit. I spoke to a few port officials and charter companies, but none of them were acquainted with Royd. He had not traded out of Avalon originally, you see.
How convenient, said Lindgren.
How suspicious, added Dan'l.
Where is he from, then? Lindgren demanded. Dan'l and I have listened to him pretty carefully. He speaks standard very flatly with no discernible accent, no idiosyncrasies to betray his origins.
Sometimes he sounds a bit archaic, Dan'l put in, and from time to time one of his constructions will give me an association, only it's a different one each time. He's traveled a lot.
Such a deduction, Lindgren said, patting his hand. Traders frequently do, love, comes of owning a starship. Dan'l glared at her, but Lindgren just went on. Seriously, though, do you know anything about him? Where did this nightflower of ours come from?
I do not know, DeBrannon admitted. I never thought to ask.
The members of his research team glanced at each other incredulously.
You never thought to ask, Christophorus said. How did you come to select this ship?
It was available. The Administrative Council approved of my project and assigned me personnel, but they could not spare an academy ship. There were budgetary constraints as well.
Agatha Marie Black laughed sourly.
What DeBrannon is telling those of you who haven't figured it out is that the academy was pleased with his studies in Xenomyth, with the discovery of the Vulcan legend, but less than enthusiastic about his plan to seek them out. So they gave him a small budget to keep him happy and productive, assuming this little mission would be fruitless, and they assigned him people who wouldn't be missed back on Avalon. She looked around. Look at the lot of you. None of us had worked with DeBrannon in the early stages, but we were all available for this jaunt. And not one of us is a first-rate scholar.
Speak for yourself, Melantha Jurl said. I volunteered for this mission.
I won't argue the point, the Psi-Psych said. The crux is that the choice of the Nightflyer is no large enigma. You just engaged the cheapest charter you could find, didn't you, DeBrannon?
Some of the available ships would not consider my proposition, DeBrannon said. The sound of it is odd, we must admit, and many shipmasters have an almost superstitious fear of dropping out of drive in interstellar space without a planet near. Of those who would agree to the conditions, Royd Eris offered the best terms, and he was able to leave at once.
And we had to leave at once, said Lindgren. Otherwise, the Vulcan might get away. They've only been passing through this region for 10,000 years, give or take a few thousand.
Someone laughed. DeBrannon was nonplussed.
Friends, no doubt I could have postponed the departure. I admit, I was eager to meet my Vulcan, to see their great ships and ask them all the questions that have haunted me, to discover the why of them. But I admit also that a delay would have been no great hardship. But why? Royd has been a gracious host, a good pilot. We have been treated well.
Did you meet him? Alice Northwind asked.
When you were making your arrangements, did you ever see him?
We spoke many times, but I was on Avalon and Royd in orbit. I saw his face on my viewscreen.
A projection, a computer simulation, could be anything, Lami Thorne said. I can have my system conjure up all sorts of faces for your viewscreen, Coroli.
No one has ever seen this Royd Eris, Christophorus said. He has made himself a cipher from the start.
Our host wishes his privacy to remain inviolate, Debrannon said.
Evasions, Lindgren said. What is he hiding?
Melantha Jurl laughed. When all eyes had moved to her, she grinned and shook her head.
Captain Royd is perfect. A strange man for a strange mission. Don't any of you love a mystery?
Here we are, flying light years to intercept a hypothetical alien starship from the core of the galaxy that has been outward bound for longer than humanity has been having wars. And all of you are upset because you can't count the warts on Royd's nose?
She leaned across the table to refill her brandy snifter.
My mother was right, she said lightly. Normals are subnormal.
Maybe we should listen to Melantha,
Lammythorn said thoughtfully.
Royd's foibles and neuroses are his business if he does not impose them on us.
It makes me uncomfortable,
Danil complained weakly.
For all we know, said Alice Northwind, we might be traveling with a criminal or alien.
Jupiter,
someone muttered. The Xenotech flushed red, and there was sniggering around the long table. But Tala Lassimer looked up furtively from his plate and giggled.
An alien, he said.
His blue eyes flicked back and forth in his skull as if seeking escape. They were bright and wild. Marij Black swore.
The drug is wearing off, she said quickly to Debrannon. I'll have to go back to my cabin to get some more.
What drug? Lammythorn demanded. Debrannon had been careful not to tell the others too much about Lassimer's ravings for fear of inflaming the shipboard tensions. What's going on?
Danger, Lassimer said.
He turned to Lammy, sitting next to him, and grasped her forearm hard, his long painted fingernails clawing at the silvery metal of her shirt.
We're in danger, I tell you. I'm reading it. Something alien. It means us ill. Blood. I see blood. He laughed. Can you taste it, Agatha? I can almost taste the blood. It can, too.
Marij Black rose.
He's not well, she announced to the others. I've been dampening him with cyanide, trying to hold his delusions in check. I'll get some more.
She started towards the door.
Dampening him?
Christopher said, horrified.
He's warning us of something. Don't you hear him? I want to know what it is.
Not cyanide, said Melantha Jurl. Try Esperon.
Don't tell me my job, woman.
Sorry, Melantha said. She gave a modest shrug.
I'm one step ahead of you, though.
Esperon might exercise his delusions, no?
Yes, but and it might help him focus on this threat he claims to detect, correct? I know the characteristics of Esperon quite well, the Psy-Psych said testily.
Melantha smiled over the rim of her brandy glass.
I'm sure you do.
Now listen to me. All of you are anxious about Royd, it seems. You can't stand not knowing whatever it is he's concealing. Rojan has been making up stories for weeks, and he's ready to believe any of them. Alice is so nervous she cut her finger off. We're squabbling constantly. Fears like that won't help us work together as a team. Let's end them. Easy enough? She pointed to Tala. Here sits a Class 1 telepath. Boost his power with Esperon, and he'll be able to recite our captain's life history to us until we're all suitably bored with it. Meanwhile, he'll also be vanquishing his personal demons.
He's watching us, the telepath said in a low, urgent voice.
No, said Caroli Debrannon. We must keep Tala dampened.
Caroli, Christopher said, this has gone too far. Several of us are nervous, and this boy is terrified. I believe we all need an end to the mystery of Royd Eris. For once, Melantha is right.
We have no right, Debrannon said. We have the need, said Lammythorn. I agree with Melantha.
Yes, echoed Alice Northwind.
The two linguists were nodding. Debrannon thought regretfully of his promise to Royd. They were not giving him any choice. His eyes met those of the Psy-Psych, and he sighed.
Do it, then, he said.
Get him the Esperon.
He's going to kill me,
Tala Lassimer screamed. He leapt to his feet, and when Lami Thorne tried to calm him with a hand on his arm, he seized a cup of coffee and threw it square in her face. It took three of them to hold him down.
Hurry,
Christophorus barked as the telepath struggled. Marij Black shuddered and left the lounge. When she returned, the others had lifted Lassimer to the table and forced him down, pulling aside his long, pale hair to bare the arteries in his neck. Marij Black moved to his side.
Stop that, Royd said. There is no need.
His ghost shimmered into being in its empty chair at the head of the long dinner table. The Psi-Psych froze in the act of slipping an ampule of Esperon into her injection gun, and Alice Northwind startled visibly and released one of Lassimer's arms. The captive did not pull free. He lay on the table breathing heavily, his pale blue eyes fixed glassily on Royd's projection, transfixed by the vision of his sudden materialization. Melantha Gerald lifted her brandy glass in salute. Boo, she said. You've missed dinner, Captain.
Royd, said Caroli de Brannan, I am sorry.
The ghost stared unseen at the far wall.
Release him, said the voice from the communicators. I will tell you my great secrets if my privacy intimidates you so.
He has been watching us, Dan'l said.
We're listening,
Northwind said suspiciously.
What are you?
I liked your guess about the gas giants, Royd said. Sadly, the truth is less dramatic. I am an ordinary Homo sapien in middle age. 68 standard if you require precision. The hologram you see before you is the real Royd Eris, or was so some years ago. I am somewhat older now, but I use computer simulation to project a more youthful appearance to my guests.
Oh? Lami Thorne's face was red where the coffee had scalded her.
Then why the secrecy? I will begin the tale with my mother, Royd replied. The Night Flyer was her ship originally, custom built to her design in the new home space yards. My mother was a free trader, a notably successful one. She was born trash on a world called Vess, which is a very long way from here, although perhaps some of you have heard of it. She worked her way up position by position until she won her own command. She soon made a fortune through a willingness to accept the unusual consignment, fly off the major trade routes, take her cargo a month or a year or 2 years beyond where it was customarily transferred. Such practices are riskier but more profitable than flying the mail runs. My mother did not worry about how often she and her crews returned home. Her ships were her home. She forgot about Vess as soon as she left it, and seldom visited the same world twice if she could avoid it.
Adventurous, Melantha Gerald said.
No, Royd said. Sociopathic. My mother did not like people, you see. Not at all. Her crews had no love for her, nor she for them. Her one great dream was to free herself from the necessity of crew altogether. When she grew rich enough, she had it done. The Night Flyer was the result. After she boarded it at New Home, she never touched a human being again or walked a planet's surface. She did all her business from the compartments that are now mine by viewscreen or lasercom. You would call her insane. You would be right.
The ghost smiled faintly.
She did have an interesting life, though, even after her isolation. The world she saw, Caroli. The things she might have told you would break your heart, but you'll never hear them. She destroyed most of her records for fear that other people might get some use or pleasure from her experiences after her death. She was like that.
And you?
Asked Alice Northwind. She must have touched at least one other human being, Lindgren put in with a smile.
I should not call her my mother, Royd said. I am her cross-sex clone. After 30 years of flying the ship alone, she was bored. I was to be her companion and lover. She could shape me to be a perfect diversion. She had no patience with children, however, and no desire to raise me herself. After she had done the cloning, I was sealed in a nurturing tank, an embryo linked into her computer. It was my teacher. before birth and after. I had no birth, really. Long after the time a normal child would have been born, I remained in the tank growing, learning, on slow time, blind and dreaming and living through tubes. I was to be released when I had attained the age of puberty, at which time she guessed I would be fit company.
How horrible, Caroli de Brannan said. Royd's my friend. I did not know.
I'm sorry, Captain, Melantha Jurl said. You were robbed of your childhood.
I never missed it, Royd said, nor her. Her plans were all futile, you see. She died a few months after the cloning, when I was still a fetus in the tank. She had programmed the ship for such an eventuality, however. It dropped out of drive and shut down, drifted in interstellar space for 11 standard years while the computer made me.
He stopped smiling.
I was going to say while the computer made me a human being. Well, while the computer made me whatever I am, then. That was how I inherited the Night Flyer. When I was born, it took me some months to acquaint myself with the operation of the ship and my own origins.
Fascinating, said Caroli de Brannan.
Yes, said the linguist Lindrum,
but it doesn't explain why you keep yourself in isolation.
Ah, but it does, Melantha Jurl said.
Captain, perhaps you should explain further for the less improved models.
My mother hated planets, Royd said. She hated stinks and dirt and bacteria, the irregularity of the weather, the sight of other people. She engineered for us a flawless environment as sterile as she could possibly make it. She disliked gravity as well. She was accustomed to weightlessness from years of service on ancient free traders that could not afford gravity grids, and she preferred it. These were the conditions under which I was born and raised. My body has no immune systems, no natural resistance to anything. Contact with any of you would probably kill me and would certainly make me very sick. My muscles are feeble, in a sense atrophied. The gravity the Night Flyer is now generating is for your comfort, not mine. To me, it is agony. At this moment, the real me is seated in a floating chair that supports my weight. I still hurt, and my internal organs may be suffering damage. It is one reason why I do not often take on passengers.
You share your mother's opinion of the run of humanity? Asked Marij Black.
I do not. I like people. I accept what I am, but I did not choose it. I experience human life in the only way I can, vicariously. I am a voracious consumer of books, tapes, hollow plays, fictions, and drama, and histories of all sorts. I have experimented with dream dust, and infrequently when I dare, I carry passengers. At those times, I drink in as much of their lives as I can.
If you kept your ship under weightlessness at all times, you could take on more riders, suggested Lami Thorne.
True, Royd said politely. I have found, however, that most planet-born are as uncomfortable weightless as I am under gravity. A shipmaster who does not have artificial gravity or elects not to use it attracts few riders. The exceptions often spend much of the voyage sick or drugged. No. I could also mingle with my passengers, I know, if I kept to my chair and wore a sealed environwear suit. I have done so. I find it lessens my participation instead of increasing it. I become a freak, a maimed thing, one who must be treated differently and kept at a distance. These things do not suit my purpose. I prefer isolation. As often as I dare, I study the aliens I take on as riders.
Aliens?
Northwind's voice was confused.
You are all aliens to me, Royd answered.
Silence filled the Night Flyer's lounge.
I am sorry this has happened, my friend,
Caroli de Brannan said. We ought not have intruded on your personal affairs.
Sorry? Muttered Agatha Marij Black.
She frowned and pushed the ampule of Esperon into the injection chamber.
Well, it's glib enough, but is it the truth? We still have no proof, just a new bedtime story. The hologram could have claimed it was a creature from Jupiter, a computer, or a diseased war criminal just as easily.
We have no way of verifying anything that he said.
No, we have one way, rather.
She took two quick steps forward to where Tyler Lassimer lay on the table. He still needs treatment, and we still need confirmation, and I don't see any sense in stopping now after we've gone this far. Why should we live with all this anxiety if we can end it all now? Her hand pushed the telepath's unresisting head to one side. She found the artery and pressed the gun to it.
Agatha, said Caroli de Brannan, don't you think, perhaps, we should forego this now that Royd...
No, Royd said.
Stop. I order it. This is my ship. Stop or...
Or what?
The gun hissed loudly, and there was a red mark on the telepath's neck when she lifted it away. Lassimer raised himself to a half-sitting position, supported by his elbows, and Marij Black moved close to him.
Tala, she said in her best professional tones, focus on Royd. You can do it. We all know how good you are. Wait just a moment. The Esperon will open it all up for you.
His pale blue eyes were clouded.
Not close enough, he muttered. I'm one tested.
Good. You know I'm good. But I got to be close.
He trembled.
The Sci-Sci put an arm around him, stroked him, coaxed him.
The Esperon will give you range, Tala, she said. Feel it. Feel yourself grow stronger. Can you feel it? Everything's getting clear, isn't it?
Her voice was a reassuring drone.
You can hear what I'm thinking. I know you can, but never mind that. The others, too, push them aside. All that chatter, thoughts, desires, fear. Push it all aside. Remember the danger now. Remember. Go find it, Tala. Go find the danger. Look beyond the wall there. Tell us what it's like beyond the wall. Tell us about Royd. Was he telling the truth? Tell us. You're good. We all know that. You can tell us.
The phrases were almost an incantation. He shrugged off her support and sat upright by himself.
I can feel it, he said.
His eyes were suddenly clearer.
Something. My head hurts. I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid, said Marij Black. The Esperon won't make your head hurt. It just makes you better. We're all here with you. Nothing to fear. She stroked his brow.
Tell us what you see.
Tala Lassimer looked at Royd's ghost with terrified little boy eyes, and his tongue flicked across his lower lips.
He's...
Then, his skull exploded. Hysteria and confusion. The telepath's head had burst with awful force, splattering them all with blood and bits of bone and flesh. His body thrashed madly on the tabletop for a long instant, blood spurting from the arteries in his neck in a crimson stream, his limbs twitching in a macabre dance. His head had simply ceased to exist, but he would not be still. Agatha Marij Black, who had been standing closest to him, dropped her injection gun and stood slack-mouthed. She was drenched with his blood, covered with pieces of flesh and brain. Beneath her right eye, a long sliver of bone had penetrated her skin, and her own blood was mingling with his. She did not seem to notice. Rojan Christophorus fell over backwards, scrambled to his feet, and pressed himself hard against the wall. Danil screamed and screamed and screamed until Lindron slapped him hard across a blood-smeared cheek and told him to be quiet. Alice Northwind dropped to her knees and began to mumble a prayer in a strange tongue. Caroli de Brannan sat very still, staring, blinking, his chocolate cup forgotten in his hand.
Do something,
Lami Thorne moaned.
Somebody do something.
One of Lassimer's arms moved feebly and brushed against her. She shrieked and pulled away. Melantha Gerald pushed aside her brandy snifter.
Control yourself, she snapped. He's dead. He can't hurt you.
They all looked at her, but for de Brannan and Marij Black, both of whom seemed frozen in shock. Royd's projection had vanished at some point, Melantha realized suddenly. She began to give orders. Danil, Lindran, Rojan, find a sheet or something to wrap him in and get him out of here. Alice, you and Lami get some water and sponges. We've got to clean up. Melantha moved to Debranin's side as the others rushed to do as she had told them. Karoli, she said, putting a gentle hand on his shoulder. Are you all right, Karoli? He looked up at her, gray eyes blinking.
Yes, I am. I told her not to go ahead, Melantha. I told her.
Yes, you did, Melantha Jarl said. She gave him a reassuring pat and moved around the table to Agatha Marige Black. Agatha, she called. But the Sysak did not respond, not even when Melantha shook her bodily by the shoulders. Her eyes were empty. She's in shock, Melantha announced. She frowned at the sliver of bone protruding from Marige Black's cheek. Sponging off her face with a napkin, she carefully removed the splinter. What do we do with the body? Asked Lindran. They had found a sheet and wrapped it up. It had finally stopped twitching, although blood continued to seep out, turning the concealing sheet red.
Put it in a cargo hold, suggested Christophorus.
No, Melantha said. Not sanitary. It will rot. She thought for a moment. Suit up and take it down to the drive room, cycle it through, and lash it in place somehow. Tear up the sheet if you have to. That section of the ship is vacuum. It will be best there. Christophorus nodded, and the three of them moved off, the dead weight of Lassimer's corpse supported between them. Melantha turned back to Marige Black, but only for an instant. Lami Thorne, who was mopping the blood from the tabletop with a piece of cloth, suddenly began to retch violently. Melantha swore.
Someone help her, she snapped.
Karoli Debranin finally seemed to stir. He rose and took the blood-soaked cloth from Lami's hand and led her away back to his cabin.
I can't do this alone,
whined Alice Northwind, turning away in disgust. Help me then, Melantha said. Together, she and Northwind half-led and half-carried the Sysak from the lounge, cleaned her and undressed her, and put her to sleep with a shot of one of her own drugs. Afterwards, Melantha took the injection gun and made the rounds. Northwind and Lami Thorne required mild tranquilizers, Danil a somewhat stronger one. It was 3 hours before they met again. The survivors, assembled in the largest of the cargo holds, where three of them hung their sleep webs. 7 of 8 attended. Agatha Marige Black was still unconscious, sleeping or in a coma or deep shock. None of them were sure. The rest seemed to have recovered, though their faces were pale and drawn. All of them had changed clothes, even Alice Northwind, who had slipped into a new jumpsuit identical to the old one.
I do not understand, Karoli Debranin said. I do not understand what...
We killed them is all.
Northwind said bitterly.
His secret was in danger, so he just blew him apart. We all saw it.
I cannot believe that, Karoli Debranin said in an anguished voice. I cannot. Royd and I, we have talked many a night when the rest of you were sleeping. He is gentle, inquisitive, sensitive, a dreamer. He understands about Dvorgrin. He would not do such a thing, could not.
His projection certainly winked out quick enough when it happened, Lindran said, and you'll notice he hasn't had much to say since. The rest of us haven't been unusually talkative either, said Melantha Jurl. I don't know what to think, but my impulse is to side with Karoli. We have no proof that the captain was responsible for Tala's death. There's something here none of us understands yet. Alice Northwind grunted.
Proof, she said disdainfully.
In fact, Melantha continued unperturbed, I'm not even sure anyone is responsible. Nothing happened until he was given the Esperon. Could the drug be at fault?
Hell of a side effect, Lindran muttered.
Rojan Christophorus frowned.
This is not my field, but I would think no. Esperon is extremely potent with both physical and psionic side effects, verging on the extreme, but not that extreme.
What then? Said Lami Thorn. What killed him?
The instrument of death was probably his own talent, the xenobiologist said, undoubtedly augmented by the drug. Besides boosting his principal power, his telepathic sensitivity, Esperon would also tend to bring out other psi talents that might have been latent in him.
Such as? Lami demanded.
Biocontrol. Telekinesis.
Melantha Jurl was way ahead of him.
Esperon shoots blood pressure way up anyway.
Increase the pressure in his skull even more by rushing all the blood in his body to his brain. Decrease the air pressure around his head simultaneously using Teki to induce a short-lived vacuum. Think about it.
They thought about it, and none of them liked it.
Who could do such a thing? Karoli DeBrannon said. It could only have been self-induced, his own talent wild out of control.
Or turned against them by a greater talent,
Alice Northwind said stubbornly.
No human telepath has talent on that order, to seize control of someone else, body, mind, and soul, even for an instant.
Exactly,
the stout Xenotech replied.
No human telepath.
Gas giant people?
Lami Thorne's tone was mocking. Alice Northwind stared her down.
I could talk about the crazed sensitives or give Yankee soul sucks. Name a half dozen others off the top of my head, but I don't need to. I'll only name one. A haranguing mind.
That was a disquieting thought. All of them fell silent and stirred uneasily, thinking of the vast, inimical power of a haranguing mind hidden in the command chambers of the Night Flyer, until Melantha Jurl broke the spell with a short, derisive laugh.
You're frightening yourself with shadows, Alice, she said. What you're saying is ridiculous if you stop to think about it. I hope that isn't too much to ask. You're supposed to be xenologists, the lot of you, experts in alien languages, psychology, biology, technology. You don't act the part. We warred with old Haranga for 1,000 years, but we never communicated successfully with a Harangan mind. If Royd Eris is a Harangan, they've improved their conversational skills markedly in the centuries since the collapse.
Alice Northwind flushed.
You're right, she said. I'm jumpy.
Friends, said Karoli DeBrannon. We must not let our actions be dictated by panic or hysteria. A terrible thing has happened. One of our colleagues is dead, and we do not know why. Until we do, we can only go on. This is no time for rash actions against the innocent. Perhaps when we return to Avalon, an investigation will tell us what happened. The body is safe for examination, is it not?
We staggered it through the airlock into the drive room, Daniel said. It'll keep.
And it can be studied closely on our return, DeBrannon said.
Which should be immediate, said Northwind. Tell Eris to turn this ship around.
DeBrannon looked stricken. But the Volkrin! A week more and we shall know them if my figures are correct. To return would take us 6 weeks. Surely it is worth one additional week to know that they exist. Tala would not have wanted his death to be for nothing.
Before he died, Tala was raving about aliens, about danger,
Northwind insisted.
We're rushing to meet some aliens. What if they're the danger? Maybe those Volkrin are even more potent than the Harangan mind. And maybe they don't want to be met or investigated or observed. What about that, Karoli? You ever think about that? Those stories of yours. Don't some of them talk about terrible things happening to the races that meet the Volkrin?
Legends, DeBrannon said. Superstition.
A whole Fendi horde vanishes in one legend,
Rojan Christophorus put in.
We cannot put credence in these fears of others, DeBrannon argued.
Perhaps there's nothing to the stories, Northwind said. But do you care to risk it? I don't. For what? Your sources may be fictional or exaggerated or wrong. Your interpretations and computations may be in error, or they may have changed course.
The Vulcan may not even be within light years of where we'll drop out.
Ah, Melantha Drell said. I understand. Then we shouldn't go on because they won't be there, and besides, they might be dangerous.
DeBrannon smiled and Lindgren laughed.
Not funny,
protested Alice Northwind, but she argued no further.
No, Melantha continued. Any danger we are in will not increase significantly in the time it will take us to drop out of drive and look about for Vulcan. We have to drop out anyway to reprogram for the shunt home.
Besides, we've come a long way for these Vulcan, and I admit to being curious. She looked at each of them in turn, but no one spoke.
We continue, then.
And Royd, demanded Christophorus, what do we do about him?
What can we do? Said Dan'l.
Treat the captain as before, Melantha said decisively. We should open lines to him and talk.
Maybe now we can clear up some of the mysteries that are bothering us, if Royd is willing to discuss things frankly.
He is probably as shocked and dismayed as we are, my friends, said DeBrannon. Possibly he is fearful that we will blame him, try to hurt him.
I think we should cut through to his section of the ship and drag him out kicking and screaming, Christophorus said. We have the tools.
That would write a quick end to all our fears.
It could kill Royd, Melantha said. Then he'd be justified in anything he did to stop us. He controls this ship.
He could do a great deal if he decided we were his enemies. She shook her head vehemently.
No, Rojan, we can't attack Royd. We've got to reassure him.
I'll do it, if no one else wants to talk to him.
There were no volunteers.
All right, but I don't want any of you trying any foolish schemes.
Go about your business. Act normally.
Coralie DeBrannon was nodding agreement.
Let us put Royd and poor Tala from our minds and concern ourselves with our work, with our preparations.
Our sensory instruments must be ready for a deployment as soon as we shift out of drive and re-enter normal space so we can find our quarry quickly.
We must review everything we know of the Vulcan.
He turned to the linguists and began discussing some of the preliminaries he expected of them, and in a short time the talk had turned to the Vulcan, and bit by bit the fear drained out of the group. Lami Thorne sat listening quietly, her thumb absently rubbing her wrist implant, but no one noticed the thoughtful look in her eyes. Not even Royd Eris. Watching. Melantha Jurl returned to the lounge alone. Someone had turned out the lights.
Captain, she said softly.
He appeared to her, pale, glowing softly, with eyes that did not see. His clothes, filmy and out of date, were all shades of white and faded blue.
Hello, Melantha,
the mellow voice said from the communicators, as the ghosts silently mouthed the same words.
Did you hear, Captain?
Yes, he said, his voice vaguely tinged by surprise. I hear and see everything on my night flyer, Melantha. Not only in the lounge, and not only when the communicators and view screens are on.
How long have you known?
Known? She smiled.
Since you praise Alice's gas giant solution to the Roydian mystery.
The communicators were not on that night. You had no way of knowing unless I have never made a mistake before, Royd said. I told Crowley, but that was deliberate. I am sorry. I've been under stress.
I believe you, Captain, she said. No matter. I'm the improved model, remember? I guessed weeks ago.
For a time, Royd said nothing. Then,
when do you begin to reassure me?
I'm doing so right now. Don't you feel reassured yet?
The apparition gave a ghostly shrug.
I am pleased that you and Coralie do not think I murdered that man. Otherwise, I am frightened. Things are getting out of control, Melantha. Why didn't she listen to me? I told Coralie to keep him dampened. I told Agatha not to give him that injection. I warned them.
They were afraid, too, Melantha said. Afraid that you were only trying to frighten them off, to protect some awful plan. I don't know.
It was my fault, in a sense. I was the one who suggested Esperon. I thought it would put Tala at ease and tell us something about you. I was curious. She frowned. A deadly curiosity. Now I have blood on my hands. Melantha's eyes were adjusting to the darkness in the lounge. By the faint light of the holograph, she could see the table where it had happened. Dark streaks of drying blood across its surface among the plates and cups and cold pots of tea and chocolate. She heard a faint dripping as well, and could not tell if it was blood or coffee. She shivered. I don't like it in here.
If you would like to leave, I can be with you wherever you go.
No, she said. I'll stay. Royd, I think it might be better if you were not with us wherever we go. If you kept silent and out of sight, so to speak. If I asked you to, would you shut off your monitors throughout the ship? Except for the lounge, perhaps. It would make the others feel better, I'm sure.
They don't know.
They will. You made the remark about the gas giants in everyone's hearing. Some of them have probably figured it out by now.
If I told you I had cut myself off, you would have no way of knowing whether it was the truth.
I could trust you, Melantha Drell said. Silence. The specter stared at her.
As you wish, Royd's voice said finally. Everything off. Now I see and hear only in here. Now, Melantha, you must promise to control them. No secret schemes or attempts to breach my quarters. Can you do that?
I think so, she said.
Did you believe my story? Royd asked.
Ah, she said. A strange and wondrous story, Captain. If it's a lie, I'll swap lies with you any time. You do it well. If it's true, then you are a strange and wondrous man.
It's true, the ghost said quietly.
Melantha? Yes.
Does it bother you that I have watched you? Watched you when you were not aware?
A little, she said. But I think I can understand it.
I watched you copulating.
She smiled.
Ah, she said.
I'm good at it.
I wouldn't know, Royd said. You're good to watch.
Silence. She tried not to hear the steady, faint dripping off to her right. Yes, she said after a long hesitation.
Yes?
What?
Yes, Royd, she said. I would probably sex with you if it were possible. How did you know what I was thinking?
Royd's voice was suddenly frightened, full of anxiety and something close to fear.
Easy, Melantha said, startled.
I'm an improved model. It wasn't so difficult to figure out. I told you, remember? I'm 3 moves ahead of you.
You're not a telepath, are you?
No, Melantha said. No.
Royd considered that for a long time. I believe I'm reassured, he said at last.
Good, she said.
Melantha, he added. One thing. Sometimes it is not wise to be too many moves ahead. Do you understand?
Oh? No, not really. You frighten me. Now reassure me.
Your turn, Captain Royd.
Of what? What happened in here, really?
Royd said nothing.
I think you know something, Melantha said. You gave up your secret to stop us from injecting Lassimer with Esperon. Even after your secret was forfeit, you ordered us not to go ahead. Why?
Esperon is a dangerous drug, Royd said.
More than that, Captain, Melantha said. You're evading. What killed Tala Lassimer, or is it who?
I didn't.
One of us? The Volgrin? Royd said nothing. Is there an alien aboard your ship, Captain?
Silence.
Are we in danger? Am I in danger, Captain?
I'm not afraid. Does that make me a fool?
I like people, Royd said at last.
When I can stand it, I like to have passengers. I watch them, yes. It's not so terrible. I like you and Karoli especially.
I won't let anything happen to you.
What might happen? Royd said nothing.
And what about the others, Royd? Christophorus and Northwind, Danil and Lindrum, Lami Thorn?